Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Joining me this morning as we wrap up 2021 and look ahead to 2022, the city manager for the city of Farmington, Rob Mays, is here in Studio A with me this morning. Mr. Mays, welcome back to KSJE.
Well, thank you, Scott. It's been longer than I'd like it to be. I know you've been trying hard to wrangle me in here.
Your schedule is kind of tight most days.
It is.
So yeah. I appreciate you making some time for me and our audiences to talk a little bit about how the city is doing and kind of some things that have been accomplished this year and looking ahead to, as I said, 2022. So let's start about looking back on 2021. And of course, we're still in the throes of this global pandemic, and that has a factor along all these things we're going to talk about today, I'm sure.
Yeah, in fact, and I was thinking through some of my thoughts. I jotted down some notes, and the very top thing I actually wrote down in terms of talking about what's really impacted the last year, clearly managing and dealing with COVID as a community and then as an institution, the city is probably our top accomplishment in terms of and it's been very challenging. I mean, on the worst of it, we've actually lost 5 employees, numerous family members, and so we've all been touched by this. So, but we've managed pretty well, and we've managed to maintain continuity of our services. We've kept all of our facilities open that we were allowed to have open for the maximum times that we were allowed to have open. We had some times when we had, you know, lifeguards doing washing this, and we had city councilors taking tickets, and we were moving people around, but we managed to keep things going. And even as we sit here today, things are a little better than they say they were a month ago. That was probably our worst.
Right.
But overall, we're doing well.
That's good to hear. And so with that being said, then looking back at some of the other accomplishments, of course, I know downtown has to rank pretty high.
It absolutely does. Obviously, that probably the biggest highlight is finishing the downtown complete streets projects, which was, of course, right on the kind of the heels of finishing the Civic Center renovation. So those are kind of together accomplishments of last year, even though they go back further than that. And we certainly get an awful lot of good feedback from people regarding the downtown enjoying. And we're starting to see some good interest in businesses picking back up. And certainly the restaurants are all doing great. And
I can attest to that from my lunch today. So, yeah, there you go. But and I know a lot of that work was unseen maybe these days by the public. We see the streets, we see the medians and the roundabouts, but a lot of infrastructure work underground was part of that.
Yeah, sir. While we were at it, that probably was the biggest part of it. All new electric lines, new water lines, new storm sewer lines, you know, all underground needed to be upgraded. They were all undersized, you know, years ago when things were put in. They just didn't build them to the needs we have today for all those areas. So, yeah, the expensive part of the project, but those are, you know, many, many decades of service to come from those unseen infrastructure.
Good too.
I'm glad you brought up infrastructure, Scott, because I love infrastructure.
I know you do. And yes, sir.
Even the invisible kind.
Right. Know, it's Well, it's important. If you're running a city, even I understand that, you know, streets are great and we need them. We all use them. But it's the stuff you can't see that can really come and bite you if you don't keep on top of it.
That's right. It's at a national level, we're not doing great.
Right.
That's one of the things we're really proud of over the last 15 years. Our community has really kept up on its infrastructure and way ahead of most communities.
Right. Very good. What else is on your list as an accomplishment for 2021?
Well, one of them is along the lines of infrastructure, but was really significant related to our mitigation for the drought. You know, we completed a multi-year project that we've been working on, gosh, probably from inception for 10 years, but to bring a redundant water supply from the San Juan River that we could pump into our water treatment plant one, so that if there's ever an interruption, you know, we can pump. We have both rivers we can pump from. So that's a big, again, kind of invisible.
Right.
But if we ever need it, it'll be heralded then as something important.
Sure. Well, and again, we've seen how what happens in the Animas can impact water pumping from Gold King Mine and other issues that you've shut things down just to mitigate that possible impact.
That's exactly right. So, besides just drought, there could be other right. reasons why we want to have a secondary supply. So we're in really good shape related to drought mitigation. I mean, are those that came before us? I always like to tell the story, regarding elected officials, and it matters how you vote. Lake Farmington passed by a 3-2 vote to build that back in 62, I think it
wow.
was.
So, right.
So two elected officials didn't think we could ever possibly need a reservoir that big, but three of them had the vision to pass it. So many decisions are decided that way.
And now it's become a pretty good destination for recreation too, as an additional kudo, I guess, to those that saw the vision of Farmington
Lake.
Well,
it sure has, and our Mayor Nate Duckett and really led that effort, and it's been a huge draw. Now we have to remind everybody it's a reservoir first.
Right.
If the water goes down, do we have to maintain the dam or maintain the pumps? You just have to wait to swim. We have to work on it.
Right, right. It has priorities, I suppose.
That's right.
But there has been some conversations of enlarging that reservoir. Is that still being talked about?
Yeah, yes. It's as probably more of a long-term
right, because it's expensive, I'm sure.
But we actually are involved in an engineering study to assess the dam and whether the dam could be raised. And, of course, that would add significant capacity. You don't have to raise it very much on the top.
Right,
that's the
widest
part of the surface. So it is something being studied for feasibility.
Gotcha.
And might very well be the best way for us to really take a huge step forward in terms of capacity.
Right. Well, I think about population, of course. I think just another aside, with the census numbers that came out, Farmington was notably the only community to show an increase in population over the last decade. Wasn't very big, but it was still on the positive side, and I'm sure you were maybe pleasantly surprised.
We were. I mean, I think some of that may be people relocating within the county and so forth, but we were. And, of course, in terms of size of reservoir, it's a drought mitigation
right.
as well as to plan for future growth.
Sure. So. Very good. What else is on your list as we talk about 2021 here?
You've probably had people on talking about the Ricketts Park bleachers were expanded this year. A really big area we're getting ready to celebrate is the opening of the Among the Waters, the complete trail from the far west side of the river trail all the way to Boyd Park, which connects then all the way into Animas Park. We're right, it's almost done with construction. We've got some final negotiations with a couple of property owners, and so in short time we're going to be adding probably another 3-4 miles to that trail system. So that's a huge thing, and obviously one of our community's treasures, that's
right.
for sure.
Very exciting, and a great partnership, I think, between the city and the River Reach Foundation and some of these property owners and others to make these transactions possible, right, for public use.
Yep. A couple other things that I think are noteworthy that people have given lots of feedback. We really focused on some blight removal. There were three huge blight removal projects this year. Again, you kind of forget about them and how bad they were, but down on Miller Street near Boyd Park, an area down there that old oil and gas place is now a nice area. The on Airport Drive, the Sage Hotels were long-standing challenges for us. And then maybe the biggest of all, the Anastasi Inn right there on the west end of downtown.
Right.
Which completely changes the appearance of downtown. And now from downtown, you can look right down and see that big senior independent living facility being built and really changes that. So that's something that, again, not as fun as building something new, but really a lot of positive feedback from the public on that.
Right. And those funds, I think, you feel were well spent then to get rid of it, even though the property was mostly private?
I certainly do. I mean, each is a little bit different. One of the Miller Street property we own.
That was owned by the city.
And so that's still there to be redeveloped and however possible. The Anastasi Inn was a partnership with the developer. We invested $150,000 in tearing it down as an incentive, and then they are going to do the rest of that. But we do absolutely think that was a valid point for us. And then Sage is different. We didn't have the cooperation of the owners, so we actually have put a lien on that property, and eventually when it's sold, we expect to get paid back. But by tearing down the blight, kind of puts it into the inventory for a developer to take a different kind of look at it.
And to be fair, that property had caught on fire a couple of times and had been really, it really wasn't, not much was holding it together.
No, that's right. All three of the properties that I'm talking about were not just eyesores. They were, in fact, public safety and health challenges and real issues for us.
Right.
A lot of money spent on mitigating those and police and fire response and
understood.
So, yep.
Very good. And you're hopeful that maybe, especially with the old Anasazi Inn, that's a pretty prime piece of real estate that
sure
somebody will come in and redevelop that into something here in the not too distant future.
Yeah, when you think about the money we spent on the complete streets, that was the end of it. That's where it's so this is a new bookmark to go into that, and really I think there's great potential there.
Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
The only other thing I'd mention is we get asked the time about the airport and what's going on there. We've completed, with partnership with the federal government, major improvements up there, including lengthening the runway, so that now for the first time in several decades that jets can fly there. And and then related to the airline work, we continue to work almost every week on that challenge of trying to bring or to attract jet airline service back to Farmington. We were this close. We even celebrated it. We practically popped the cork when we entered into an MOU with a regional carrier, the largest regional carrier in the country, as a matter of fact, to fly with United Express and that's when COVID hit.
Right.
And now everything's upside down. And so it's hard to say, when the airlines will be in a position with their pilot shortages and their issues to come back and add small communities. They're, in fact, retracting from small communities now. So it may be a while, but I always want to remind people we remain diligent in working on that issue.
Got you. And that seems to me to be pretty much a COVID-related issue. As the airline industry recovers, it's hopeful that maybe that carrier or others will take another look at the Farmington market. But as you say, maybe they are wary of small markets.
COVID's part of it. It's a perfect storm. A huge part of it is the pilot shortage as well. And some of that could be related to COVID, but it's the biggest challenge. The same regulations for pilots, and you and I have talked about this before as those things change, but it takes the same pilot training to fly a 747 as it does to fly a Little Beach 19 into Farmington. So the airlines, when they're short pilots, they got to move pilots into bigger aircraft and retire smaller aircraft. It's just that simple.
Gotcha.
The economics. So.
But the city seems committed to continuing to market the airport and reach out to potential carriers and make that happen for commercial air service when the time is right.
Yeah, constantly. And a couple of things that are not so much in the rearview mirror as are right upon us right now, and a lot of interest in the golf course renovations.
Right, Pinyon Hills.
There's been some newspaper stories about that recently. That's a $9 million project. It is truly a complete, what started off as really just to replace the irrigation system, then turned into all the cart paths and all the bunkers. And now a complete renovation of the clubhouse and parking lot. It's going to be a true remake of that facility. I think people are going to be very, very pleased with it. The challenge now is, if you've been by there, the supplies are trickling in and we're collecting them, and we're it's a catch 22 because we don't want to close the golf course to our customers and then have a major delay on supply chain. So everything we're doing, obviously, we're very concerned about supply chain issues, but
right.
That one's going to happen soon.
Interesting. And I guess probably it makes sense when you think about that golf course is almost 30 years old.
Yes.
And I think a lot of folks maybe don't like to think about it being 30 years old because it seems like the new golf course.
Exactly.
So.
And those, many of those, that infrastructure is beyond its useful life. So.
Right. I know there's been some talk about maybe trying to recruit or attract a smaller maybe golf tournament to town with Pinyon Hills, and maybe once those improvements are made, is that also part of this hopefulness?
Yeah, our first and foremost reason is that our citizens here, quality of life and a regional attraction, and certainly fits into our economic development target area of attracting retirees. But any continued putting us on the national scale related to the tournaments would be great.
It still gets noticed from the national press.
It's still, in spite of its challenges, it's still in the top 10 every year of golf course. I just had some family in for Thanksgiving and couldn't stop raving about how great it was. And I was like, really? Did you not see that we're fixing? But no, it's probably in the eyes of the beholder.
Right. Well, good good focus group, I guess, to give you some feedback. What else? Yeah.
Well, big dollar amounts. I'm just kind of, back to that sexy but not as important but not as sexy, our waste. We finished a $19 million complete renovation of our wastewater treatment plant about 2.5 years ago. Next on the horizon is a complete rebuild of both of our water treatment plants. Again, we're talking about $15 million in phase one and $12 million in phase two. A lot of money. It's the kind of thing that we take for granted, clean water and meeting the EPA requirements and avoiding fines. It's no fun to spend that much money on something like that. But if you ignore it, then everybody wants to know why.
Sure.
So that's a challenge. And of course, ultimately our water and wastewater rates have to include the money to pay for those plants. So that's on the horizon as far as big projects.
And okay.
Pickleball.
Yes.
Much smaller scale, but it's a
growing sport,
It's mind-boggling to me how fast it's growing and how much interest that is in that. So we've got the new, it's going to be the best in the region, Pickleball Center down there at Brookside, and that's going to be a really cool tournament quality place. So that's some of the big things. A lot of people interested. We're beginning renovations of Lions Pool, mostly used by our senior citizens, but a dearly beloved facility. Not a lot of people use it, but the people that use it is very important to them. So that's happened. That's just some of the things that kind of happening like right now, first of the year, groundbreaking on those things.
Very good. Very good. Let me ask you about some other big projects I know that the city is involved with. The Enchant Energy project out of the San Juan Generating Station, I know it's gotten a lot of interest and a lot of folks certainly watching it. We've talked to some other folks on the program before about how things are going. It seems like maybe there's been some delays, maybe COVID related or not, but it's a big project with lots of moving parts. And so from the city standpoint, are you still hopeful that things are moving forward in the right direction?
Definitely hopeful. But our position has really been the same. And I kind of set back and set some perspective because I'm also aware there's a lot of misinformation floating around and a lot of it's motivated by ideology. From our standpoint, it's been a factor of meeting the requirements of the ETA through potential technology that can be the cleanest energy produced, cleaner than natural gas and solar when you have to regulate those two and back them up. So it's a clean energy project. And it's very important to Farmington. We have $20 million invested in that plant right now, and it's going to cost about $100 million for us to replace the megawatts. And we estimate our rates to our citizens are going to have to go up 6-10% just to cover if that plant closes prematurely. So to put that in perspective, this isn't just about saving the jobs. There's also a direct impact on our reliability and our price of electricity for the Farmington Electric Utility, and that's driven a lot of our motivation. And of course, saving 1,600 jobs, you can't put a price tag on the value of that if we can pull that off. So we inherited the plant, so to speak, on paper, and that's still prospective. It doesn't happen until next year, but we marketed the plant, found a potential buyer interested in converting it to carbon capture and keeping it operating. So there have been a lot of challenges. I would say, everything has been more difficult and taken longer than expected. There's no question there are significant impacts of the COVID delay that have delayed it, but hopefully we can overcome those. A lot of it's kind of the cart and the horse for Enchant, who is the company that's partnered with us, is that you have to, the investors won't come on board until the FEED study's done, there's just a bunch of stuff that kind of depends on it. We have a lot more interest than ever in people buying the power. That was one of the early things that the detractors and the critics said, who would want that electricity? Well, if you've seen what's happened to the price of electricity in the last, and even challenges PNM's having with their meeting their obligations and not having put together their replacement power, what they're going to do when they get out of that plant. So a lot of interest in the power, but they can't contract for power until there's certainty that there'll be power that's there. So the next big issue really is the completion of the engineering for the plant.
I see.
And that's due first quarter of next year.
Got it.
Well, preliminarily first quarter and final mid-year. That's really the tall tale sign. Beyond that, things are going okay. It's some things are in a holding pattern pending that outcome. We still remain optimistic. The other big thing I really want to clarify is one of the most favorite pieces of misinformation by the critics and some of the organized critics of it around here has been that Farmington is investing in Enchan Energy. Farmington is not invested in Enchan Energy. We have spent about $2.6 million on transactional costs associated with marketing the plant, and then the transactional costs associated with if we can transfer ownership to Enchan Energy. When you're talking about the kind of complexity of a legal deal, that's really not that much money in terms of protecting the city from liability and making sure that we don't misstep on that process. And again, back to the reality, if we were the costs associated with what we're going to lose just to our customers, it's been worth that investment just with the hope of extending the life for that. So
right.
That's a big point. We're not investing in Enchan Energy in any way, shape, or form.
Good to know. And so, but yet the clock keeps ticking, right? And so this 2022 pullout date, I guess, from PNM is here or almost here, and they are still planning to walk away from that plant. And at that time, then becomes the ownership of the city of Farmington.
Well, that's part of the negotiations is that transfer with all the owners. PNM is only one of the owners. They're the operator of it. The question I think now lies is, will it in fact close at that date, or will other owners, you know, potentially want to stay in longer because of the shortage of electricity, base load electricity, or more? And so it's possible there's a time that it might have to shut down for a short period of time until Enchant's able to move ahead with operating it. So there's a lot of question marks.
Sure.
And there's no doubt.
I think that's what brings in the public their concerns about all these question marks. They don't want maybe the city to be left holding the bag, if you will, with this multi-million dollar plant. If Enchant were to walk away or the other owners were to walk away, what does that leave you with?
Well, there's no scenario by which we're left holding the bag. It either transfers and operates. The city of Farmington will only maintain its ownership the same level we have right now and taking the same power. That's again, it's one of the favorite topics of those that are agenda oriented to mislead the public on it. This is something that there's no risk to a try, and so we felt that we have to take the opportunity to try. Whether our own personal opinions as to what are the odds, everybody know what are the odds. The odds all along have been either 0 or 100, and everything is speculation in between. But we were uniquely in a position to try. And if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And it'll be well worth the effort if it does.
Sure. But you can understand the concern of the citizens and the taxpayers in Farmington to not see the city get into an area where it might be fiscally responsible for any other unseen costs from this multi-million dollar transaction.
Yeah. So once again, the city would only be maintaining its share of liability. All the owners will have the same share of liability that they've had from their past ownership. And any percent of ownership they have in the future.
Got it. Thank you for explaining that to me. And I think if I can understand it, I'm hopeful that most people in the audience can understand.
Well,
it.
A lot of people don't want to understand it, Scott. They prefer to again deal in misinformation, and that's one of the challenges we've faced.
Understood. Well, while we're talking about energy, let me ask you about solar energy, because that's another big topic. And a lot of folks may be considering putting in solar panels on their homes. There was an issue with the Farmington Electric Utility. There was a service rider fee on the installation of solar panels. The other folks called it a solar tax. Mm-hmm. And you issued a decision to eliminate that as of December 1st, if I'm remembering correctly. And so give us some maybe info about that decision and what that means, because I know if you're the Farmington Electric Utility, you probably want to keep those customers on your grid, and if they're going to go off and generate their own electricity, that's a loss to you.
Sure. So, complex issue.
Yes.
I'll try to boil it down, because there's a lot to that. So the first thing is it's not a solar tax. It's a mechanism for everyone paying their fair share. If someone wants to go completely off our grid, that we will have no concerns whatsoever.
That's up on them, right?
Yeah, they're independent. That's not what they want to do.
Right.
What they want to do is use the people's grid, use power every single day, every night, use electricity. They want to use the wires, the lines, the generation. They want the rest of the customers to keep power ready for them anytime they want it, when a cloud comes over, or every night, and they want to do all that for free, or in fact be paid by the other customers. The only motivation the City of Farmington Electric Utility has is a fair playing field for everyone, that everybody pays their fair share. And the people who can't afford to put solar on their roofs should not be subsidizing the people who are fortunate enough and wealthy enough to be able to afford to put solar. Now that is it. It's no more complicated than that. The sun doesn't shine all the time. The rest is a desire to be paid to put electricity on. So the so-called rider is simply a time that at the time was negotiated with the people that were here using. There's no perfect way. The only perfect way to know people are paying is you put 2 meters on and you measure, because, so let me back up. So you have to have, electric utility has to have power sitting in our generation assets to cover people's highest demand that they ever use at any point, including every night when the sun doesn't shine.
Right.
So that costs money and has to be sitting in reserve. Somebody has to pay for that, plus the lines, the power lines to bring it to them. And so what many solar people want, certainly people that are selling solar and making money on solar, they want people to be able to do essentially run their meter backwards. So I use everybody else's power all day long when the sun's shining, all night long, and then the next day when it's sunny, I get to run my meter back, and then I use the system, you know, for a whole month and maybe even get a check. That's called net metering, or essentially reversing it. That means people are using the electricity without paying anything for it, and they use it every single day. It's not the energy we need, because we have to already build to cover the capacity when the sun's not shining. So that's not necessarily a value back to the utility in that scenario. Now, if the sun shined all the time and a self-generator could guarantee us, I can give you 1 kilowatt all the time, then in theory we could buy it from them. But that's not what it is. It's this.
Up and down.
They want to have it, right. And so it's not
just fair. For the radio audience, I'm just explaining what you're doing.
Oh,
with your hand.
Thank you. I'm doing this.
That's okay. Yes, sir.
Up and down. So it's intermittent is the point.
Right.
So we have to regulate it. We have to have a power source ready that literally when a cloud comes over, we have to be able to up the power to give you what you need. And when the sun's not shining, we have to bring it back down because you want to use your solar at that time.
I see.
So,
let me interrupt for just a moment, because folks may be familiar with when that doesn't happen the way you describe. That's when we hear about the brownouts and the other issues in the other areas of the country. Is that true?
That's exactly right, because the grid can only handle so much solar or intermittent energy. We are agnostic about what the power source is. There's only two kinds of power out there, the kind that can burn all the time and the time that's dependent on something else, intermittent versus consistent.
Got it.
And so that's the distinction. It's not a moral issue either way. It's a matter of we have to keep the lights on, and it's not fair to have other people pay for the people who are fortunate enough to be able to afford solar. And so we're trying to find a fair way to do that so that you get benefit from your solar, because you're in fact using less, but you still pay something. It's the fee that they call a tax was a standby fee. What you're paying for is that the power is ready for you when you need it, and that you only have to take it when you want, but you take for granted that it's there for you at any given time. And that's what you're paying for. It was called a standby rider. And by the way, we are in a lawsuit with this, with a highly funded national group that's partnered with some local people and funding them, and we've won the lawsuit. It's not a solar tax. Let's just be clear about that.
Right.
But you're also going to say, why did I set it aside? I want to get to that in a minute.
Right.
So we are, though, still, there's an appeal of that lawsuit. And so we're continuing to waste resources fighting something that the lower courts already said we were right. It was legal. It's not a tax. But what we believe, the reason I set it aside with executive order is pending the cost of service study that we're doing right now. We have tried to explain our motive to it the best we can, and the critics continue to on purpose mislead people and call it a solar tax. And it's not that. It's a standby rider to cover your impact, your cost. But we think there's better ways to do that than this way. This was a less than perfect way, and it opened the door for critics to be able to purposely mislead what it is. And most people, it's too complicated of a subject. They go, yeah, that's not fair. If I have solar on my roof, I haven't got to pay an extra $4 per kilowatt. Yeah, that's because that represents, on average, your impact on for reliability. That's way too complicated for people to understand. So they go, yeah, that's not fair. And those that understand it are still happy to mislead people. But let me be clear, the courts agreed with us, and it's being appealed. I set it aside because we already have said there's a better way to do it that's perhaps even more accurate, easier to understand, and can be done in a way. And that's essentially, there's a couple ways to look at that. But in the end, there's a scenario where you charge people based on their time of use and how they use it, that you can measure their impact on it. They can use their electricity first and only pay for what they take from us. It requires a smart meter to do it. And that was some of the things, and I know I'm rambling here, but back when we put this in place, the local people, they didn't want to pay to have a second meter put on.
Sure. All
right. But now we have moved to AMI meters anyway for a variety of reasons. And those meters are capable of doing this in a better way, perhaps a more fair way, and hopefully, most importantly, a way that people can understand it. So I set that aside because it was being characterized as some almost a values-driven, that we're anti-solar here. And I was kind of tired of the critics being able to so easily and willfully misrepresent people according to it. So I said, we've been telling you we're going to do it differently. We're involving them in that process. And so we just set it aside because it's not that much money. So that's a long story.
Yeah, but I appreciate the explanation.
There'll be a new mechanism for how it's done. We're in the process of that analysis right now. New rate structure will be adopted sometime this spring. And we will be doing the standby or how we deal with our intermittent customers differently.
Got it.
But we're not going to move away from a philosophy of our non-solar people partially paying the bills for the solar people. That is not fair. Now, I get it. People want that. I mean, why wouldn't you want that?
Right.
If you're wealthy enough to afford solar and you could use electricity every single day, and anytime the sun's not shining and every night and not pay for it, that's a pretty good deal.
Right. But I think it's my understanding, if I have solar panels on my house, but it's a cloudy day and I'm using power from the power company, the electric utility or whomever, I will get billed for that.
You don't. You would for that. But if you're able to overgenerate, it's about overgenerating.
Yes.
When the sun is out and I'm generating more than I use.
Yes,
and then you net your meter back down, and then you ended up not paying a thing.
But I've generated power for you for the electric utility.
That's the misnomer. We don't need that power then.
I see.
That's when there's not a shortage of power. We still have to – the real cost of the power is we have to have those megawatts waiting.
Right.
It's demand.
Right.
It's about that we have to give it to you right then, and it's also about the wires. If you have solar on your house, you're using those wires every day, and you're not paying for them. Your neighbor's paying for them.
I see.
If there's 10 houses on a street and $1 million of infrastructure, and all of a sudden only one person can't afford solar and everybody else can, that one person has to pay for all those wires. So it's truly about equity. There's been lawsuits around the country where groups representing the poor have sued the solar lobby because of this very issue. So there's a better way to do it than the way we've done it.
Okay.
But that was a good faith way at the time to manage that issue. And there's a better way to do it, and technology will help us with that, and it will be much, much easier to understand for people.
Got it. One last question on this.
Build solar all day long.
Right, right. One final question about this, so if I'm a non-solar customer and, you know, I'm using my electricity from the city of Farmington, and then I go out and I flip the switch and turn on all of my Christmas lights, which now provide a bigger demand on the grid, but I'm not solar, but you have that demand anyway, so even non-solar customers go up and down in their use of electricity,
They do, and that's...
And they're not paying anything extra.
Well, it's part of the cost. The whole system has to be priced out to cover the cost of the wires and the cost of the maximum.
I see.
And that's right.
And the meter would reflect, I guess, that additional usage of holiday lights.
Right.
Or whatever it is.
The challenge, but they take all their power from us, and the challenge with the solar is the intermittent. And you take your example of the Christmas lights. Well, that's solar wouldn't work then anyway, right?
Right.
Now, batteries are another factor.
True.
If people have batteries, then they don't need us the same. If people could say, I want, and by the way, customers that do guarantee they'll take X amount, they get a cheaper rate.
Okay.
All of our residents do pay for the fluctuation. It's just done on average. And the day will come with this next generation of meters that it will be that specific, even to every house. So in other words, you could be a customer that says, hey, I'm not going to do those high demands. And you'll impact, your costs will literally be different to the utility. And your bill would be able to reflect that. We don't have that sophistication at this point in time.
Got it. Understood. Thank you for explaining that to me and the audiences. I appreciate it very much. We're almost out of time.
Sure.
Rob Mays, City Manager, City of Farmington. But put on your crystal ball or look into your crystal ball. And what do you see in 2022? City finances? I mean, how are things looking? Gross receipts and some of those other things that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah. Well, sitting here today, we've recovered back to where we were about 2 years ago. So pre-pandemic, which in fact, just put in perspective, puts us about equal to 2009. So
it's
important to understand the big picture. It's all relative.
Yes, sir.
But sitting here today, we feel really good. Our revenues are up 14% from a year ago, GRT.
Okay.
But that's comparing to a very low time. That's about equal to the year before.
2019.
Pandemic. Yeah, back to the pandemic.
Okay.
Which was about even to 2009.
Right.
So we feel
The recession and other economic things in between, I understand.
We feel really good about where we're sitting today. And
good.
So that's positive. As far as the crystal ball, it's really hard to say. Obviously, a lot of people that are tracking the pandemic, you know, are as concerned about the potential relapse of economic challenges from it as much as the medical and the health crisis of it. So hard to say, but right now, you know, people are, you know, we just need people to be willing to go to work. That's the big question mark for us as we're curtailing services and hours and facilities because we can't hire people. We're pretty much okay because the summer rush is off and a lot of our summer help would have not be working out any, but when it comes to spring, We'll be able to hire enough lifeguards and hire enough, you know, workers to, you know, last year we couldn't even clean the bathrooms in the parks. We had to put out portables and hire a company because we didn't have staff. We were operating about, you know, 30% low of our normal staffing. So it is an odd deal what's happening out there with so many concerns.
Jobs are available. You just didn't have the applicants.
That's right.
Interesting.
And us and everybody else.
Right.
I mean, it's private sector, public sector, talk to any. So there's a mystery there that yet to be solved. But that's a big factor whether we'll be able to hire people next year.
Gotcha. But as far as finances look, the city is in fairly healthy shape. I know folks here certainly watch the price of oil and gas. It has been up very high. It's coming back down a little bit now, but it seems like certainly the state is talking about surpluses in Santa Fe next year, and so it seems like things are relatively positive on that front too.
They are, I think, particularly in the southern part of the state, which is more oil. As
right.
you know, we're more gas here, but we're doing better. I mean, oil and gas is up 28% from a year ago.
Yeah.
So that sector.
That's all price driven, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so that's definitely a when you talk about that 13% is the average of all the sectors. Oil and gas is up 28, and most sectors are up from a year ago. So that's very positive. I think the big question here is to kind of know how much of the current economy is influenced by federal money that's flowing into the economy, both directly to government entities in some cases, you know, and to consumers. Another big factor that's changed for us, and you and I have talked many times about Hold Harmless and the taxes on the internet.
Right.
You know, we are now receiving our share for the internet sales. And so that's another factor.
It's been a long time coming.
It's been a long time coming. So it's still really bad for our local businesses and jobs.
Right.
But as far as the city's concerned, we don't lose money on the internet anymore, or nor does the county. The state's been getting that windfall for years. And at least there's a level playing field, so you pay the same tax.
Right.
So that's better for our local businesses.
Gotcha.
Certainly.
And just to go back a little bit about the pandemic, and as we move forward, and again, we have variants and other news that's coming out, it seems to me like there's less talk of lockdowns and things like that these days because we have vaccines and we have more knowledge about the virus and things like that. And so economically speaking, I would hope that would bode better for communities across our state if that philosophy continues.
I agree with you 100%. I would hope that we're better prepared now, both with treatments and certainly vaccines, that that there wouldn't have to be the lockdowns associated with, but obviously the big concern is our hospital, our healthcare system, and so we continue at the city to every chance we get to put out the message, you know, talk to your doctor about getting vaccinated. We fall short of trying to pretend we're doctors,
right?
So we don't feel like it's our place to tell people to get vaccinated, but we sure tell people, I've been vaccinated. Please talk to your doctor about getting vaccinated.
Right.
You know, hopefully you'll come to the same conclusion I did.
Very true. Very true. Well, Rob Mays, it's been a pleasure having you in this morning. I always want to compliment the city on its support of the arts throughout the community. You know, what's being done at the Civic Center and out at Lions Wilderness Park and now the Tota Theater and other venues around the city, I think has been wonderful, and it's been great to see. So, and the support of other arts organizations too. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it was great to be with you always. Anytime.
All right. Happy New Year.
Thanks. Same to you.
Thank you very much. It's Rob Mays, City Manager with the City of Farmington, my guest this morning here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.